Hello, and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks in the Learning College. I'm Alex Linder. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com and permanently archived at alexlinder.com. Today we're going to do the middle of Chapter 9 of James Mason's Siege, 916 through 927. And he'll be talking more about Charles Manson and maybe some other things. 9.16, Manson's Way. Manson cannot comprehend why otherwise intelligent adults would want to try and pretend that this is Germany 1933 or the U.S. South in 1876, or indulge in any other fantasy to the expense of the stated struggle which is at hand. Having been through this movement, I can comprehend it, though I'm not proud of it, and have found that, in trying to explain it to Manson, the whole sorry thing sticks in my throat. The reason Manson can't understand it is that he goes on the assumption that any who are in possession of so large a chunk of the truth, as is the racialist right, would proceed as he himself proceeds, in total honesty. Those who have seen the light know that the operators within the movement are a notoriously dishonest bunch of fakers and rip-offs, and do the truth the grossest disservice by their very presence. That's why people can't, at first, countenance Manson. He does not deal in images or gimmicks, only reality, the way it is. Most people simply can't stand this. They haven't got the brain capacity or the guts for it. When they look at Manson, they see themselves and they, unless they are right inside, hate it. So for lack of a better understanding of it, they direct this hatred towards Manson. Is it any wonder, then, why we get so many of these reactions from within the right, having been the haven that it has for all the many cowards and defectives? But the right can no longer deliver the cheap, vicarious thrills it used to, and the curiosity seekers are thinning out along the carnival midway. Reality has arrived, and business for fakers is bad. If one were to attach a human name to stand for reality, that name would be Manson. It is planet Earth, here and now. A leader who is alive is called for. There has to be guidance, authority, unity that can only be provided by the kind of personality that can fulfill the demands of Hitler's leadership principle. Many will be called, but few will answer. Fewer still will be chosen. This, however, is not cultism, but the reality of the situation. As revolutionary National Socialists, we denounced and abandoned the so-called mass idea as worthless. But even a winning minority is going to have to number in the hundreds of thousands, and, therefore, the task is every bit as awesome as it ever was. The difference now must be that we correctly assess the situation, accurately perceive what measures are called for, and then set our plans accordingly. Only a master of the sense of reality can focus through the shroud of Jewish-created illusion, determine the proper course, and define the right action. Provenance unknown. 917. The truth ignored. Not only is the truth ignored, it is cursed and defamed. Any National Socialist in the world can attest to that. Manson's idea is the same as the NS program, only that it is, understandably, intended for this time and this place. The vast differences in times and places fully account for the seemingly vast discrepancies between Manson and Hitler. Adolf Hitler was the last to offer the world workable, orderly, and just solutions, and, most important, to be in a position to actually deliver. The world's answer to Hitler was the Second World War. It was no fault of Manson's, then, that, though he wasn't in much of a position to deliver, he did still in all offer the truth. The answer he received was 9 sentences of life imprisonment. As George Lincoln Rockwell, another martyr for the truth, said in his writings, anyone so conceited and foolish as to be determined to flaunt nature's laws, or truth, may do so, but only for a limited period of time. He cannot go on doing so indefinitely. A man determined to flaunt, for example, the law of gravity may dive off the top of the Empire State Building and, for a while, seem to be actually getting away with it. But then he reaches the ground, reality, and is judged very harshly. So it is, and so it will be, with people of the world. The spirit of liberalism, let alone the hand of Big Brother, cannot refrain from flirting with catastrophe. Economic, social, environmental, racial, and the ultimate answer to all this gets closer each day. What do you do with one insistent upon leaping to their death, or with those who will not hear the truth, but who will go far out of their way to persecute it? If they won't have it, if they choose to attack it, then the best thing you can do is save yourself. I refer again to those obscenely distorted accounts of the Manson family experiences on the California desert, which are readily available in any community's bookshop, right alongside William L. Shirer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, of which one respected historian has commented that the book contains an average of at least one factual error per page, to show just how Manson and his followers set about doing this very thing. The movement, too, is more and more thinking in these terms, but not with the sense of urgency or the totality which Manson did. Just as with the sinking of a great ocean liner, getting over the rail isn't enough. One must swim hard and fast to put sufficient distance between himself and the sinking ship, or else be sucked under by it. So much for urban survivalists. And so much for passivity. As was said last year, the renewed version of revolutionary National Socialism was built and grew concomitant with the increasing familiarity and devotion to Charles Manson and his idea, capital I. It certainly was no accident that it was revolutionary National Socialists and not some other more or less traditional movement front that made this transition. Revolutionary National Socialism, from the beginning, was known for its stand on guerrilla warfare against the system. Expressed beliefs and theories are one thing, but putting them into practical application and then seeing what they're called is quite another. Quote, terrorism usually turns out to be the term most often used. That brings us right back around, full circle, to the start. Those who start with the truth, though they may do so separately, ultimately end up together with the truth, regardless whether they be hailed or cursed by the masses. Volume 12, Number 2, February 1983. 918, Helter Skelter. Manson says simply that when the television goes off, the people will go insane. The spell will be broken, and what shall reality consist of other than hell having made itself manifest on earth? That's when the thought and preparation undertaken today will pay off for those who did more than talk about the deplorability of it all. And Charles Manson will share no blame for any of it. I would add that the people will go insane trying to place culpability. In all likelihood, they'll kill themselves off in a mad frenzy. I've said before that I want to be around for the finale, but not in the midst of that scenario. I'd prefer surveying the scene of the carnage after it has died down. The bright spot to all of this is that, once the forces of the system have been swept away, then universal order will be established naturally. I can't imagine anyone not wanting to be on its side. Volume 12, Number 2, February 1983. 919. The meaning of universal order. The name universal order is not one more crinkle jammer replacement for anything more properly termed Nazi, nor is it any head trip, grandiose organization designed mainly to enhance someone's ego. In fact, universal order is more a concept than the name of any group or organization. Universal order, as opposed to some kind of localized, specialized, exclusive order. When order is truly universal, and only then, It will be right, proper, and most of all, everlasting. This will include National Socialism, of course, and by direct implication, it will provide no place anywhere in the universe for alien order. Why did universal order make its appearance here in the midst of the hard U.S. radical right wing? Why not among the left or among the moral majority? Or for that matter, why didn't it spring forth on its own from virgin soil? Why, in fact, out of the U.S. Nazi movement? Because, as was said earlier, it is only here where a large enough measure of the complete truth has resided for so long, where enough idealistic and altruistic individuals have rallied and fought, that universal order could take on a solid form and begin its organizational drive outward. It is only among the best and most forward-thinking of today's National Socialists that universal order could be understood and embraced once these same National Socialists realized that this is what they had been reaching and striving for over the past 10 years and more. The most extensive background in the U.S. Nazi movement serves only as a partially adequate stepping stone to an understanding of universal order. Those who so foolishly state that Charles Manson is, quote, hardly NS material, are likened to those of a modern-day Methodist or Presbyterian church, with all their dogma and social consciousness, who wouldn't allow the actual Jesus of Nazareth into their buildings, for being in violation of prevailing hair and dress codes. And what would they then term NS material? Why, of course, some type mainly suitable for a small role in a Hollywood docudrama, a parody of real National Socialism. But I refuse to concede the movement to these types, even though they may be in preponderance. Hitler had his problem with them, and so did Rockwell. They are the fringers, the coattail hangers, who gravitate toward the strong in hope some of it might rub off onto them. The trouble is, instead of the association doing them any good, they, by their presence, only tend to short-circuit the good works of others. In short, the movement is a mess. But then the whole world is in a mess. Here in the movement, the problems have been diagnosed and the solutions outlined for literally generations. Every necessary tool is at hand. Yet the movement is retrogressing today. Why? The degree of control by the enemy cannot be used as an excuse, for it is only, as Hitler would say, an obstacle that exists to be broken, not surrendered to. The sorry shape of the people, likewise, cannot be used as an alibi. Hitler also said that the masses are female and that it is up to the male drive to reach them and conquer or win them. No, the problem still rests inside the movement itself. Too few have started, and too many have stopped looking for a new beginning, a real beginning, to the creation of a true movement. Things are all out of tune. No one has yet struck the correct balance required to release that first bolt of lightning. Volume 12, Number 3, March 1983. 9.20, 9.20, 1001 Diversions. Though what a dreary, tiresome task it would be, someone should try to catalog the number as well as the names of all the microscopic groups which make up the galaxy loosely referred to as the movement. A study in futility and impotency. Every one of them disguised as something or another, and with all their effort going toward the upkeep of the disguise rather than the expressed purpose. Commander Rockwell referred to these types as, quote, sneaky Nazis. Mostly they knew and understood what National Socialism was and is about, but had no stomach or self-discipline to join the real fight in earnest. Note, there are no sneaky Mansonites, but for vastly different reasons. From direct personal experience, I tell you that the name of Manson can be used for the same purposes the name of Hitler can be used. Minus 95% of the usual hassles which immediately follow due to the huge job of conditioning that the Jews have done on people over the last 40 or 50 years. Most of you in the movement have not considered the way Manson is at first taken by average people. Young, wild, American, anti-establishment, and finally, yes, a criminal type, but certainly not on the order of what they have whipped up regarding Hitler. Manson scares people, but he does so in the way they like to be scared. There is no huge, vague, ugly thing attached to Manson as there is to Hitler. After a time, once people have been sufficiently brought around, you may introduce them to Hitler without much risk of losing them. This is but one example of the right balance, the right approach at work. But the reason there are no sneaky Mansonites is several-sided. Once a person knows what Manson is about and actually shares it, he is no longer interested or concerned with sneaking around about anything. Who are we trying to hide from? What are we trying to conceal? Who are we trying to kid? We, after all, are the ones representing life. We have the answers. We have what it is everybody needs and wants. So why should we sneak? If a person likes to dress up in a 1930s German uniform, for example, I can understand the need to sneak and hide. But we go forth among our fellows ready at any time to impart truth to whomever seeks it or will hear it. Second, the sneaky Nazis are several steps below open Nazis because they are aware of what they are doing and yet lack the courage and honesty to correct themselves. On the contrary, more Nazis aren't Mansonites for the very reason that they have no understanding of what he represents. A real Nazi would never reduce himself to some crinkle jammer waste of time, just as that one that is part of universal order and the whole Manson idea confounds the enemy, just as it confuses the blockheaded, faint-hearted, and lukewarm, because it is so new, yet timeless, and cannot be copied from, at least not copied effectively. Do not deny your prophets, your heroes, and your saviors. As long as there is any breach of faith anywhere, nothing positive can ever proceed. It is something that the ignorant and the stubborn will have to live with. Volume 12, Number 3, March 1983. Women. The night of the Tate surprise party, there were not enough good men around to handle the job, and so it was left mostly up to the women. In Manson's family, the ratio of women to men stood at about 5-1. Women, then, were Manson's best troop. To go back in time and to change in location, it was women, by their majority, who elected Hitler to power in Germany. Maybe the deadliest built-in source of destruction the U.S. right has is its attitude toward women. Ever notice the typical right-wing married couple? The little lady is ever bitching at hubby to drop that garbage and get a better-paying job. His own kids see him as a poor man's Archie Bunker. That's on a good day. The rest of the time, it is off to divorce court. Why? Is the movement really garbage? Are these women really bitches? No. The answer is no. The problem in every case lies with the man. The U.S. right is made up of frustrated men, men who are afraid of this or that or the other and seek the company of others who are similarly frustrated and frightened in order to be able to ease their angst and perhaps work out some of their fantasies. What woman on earth would respond to that? Women don't respond to the false macho of the phony paramilitary of the U.S. right, nor are they turned on by the secretiveness of it all. Because these men are unable to form an effective organization which has the power to take the issue to the streets, to the enemy, they keep it at home, instead to the neglect and alienation of their families. The enemy knows this and delights in the knowledge. Further, because of all this, the home, wife, and family of the average right-winger, Nazi, KKK, or whatever, has become the biggest weak point with regard to system attacks. Break a man's home or turn his wife against him, and you have him. Among the left, this is not the situation. Though they may be badly deluded in their beliefs, between a man and woman, the commitment is shared, and the struggle is shared as comrades. This is one main reason why the left is so much more successful than the right. The women are involved. I've witnessed recent right-wing attempts at involving their few women, and it amounts to trying to place them into uniforms and under the same kind of discipline as the men, a la American Legion, etc. It doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is it looks about as crappy as the system itself, and it turns the women off, as well it should. It is scandalous and notorious that most right-wing leaders are very questionable as to the issue of sexual preference. This follows naturally when one takes a quick look at the mess the movement is in outwardly, for it is merely a reflection. Hitler, Rockwell, Tomasi, and certainly Manson exerted a strong, almost animal attraction over women and gloried in their company. This quality goes hand in hand with the dynamism necessary to make a movement. Sterility and impotence remain just that. Women make the most excellent fanatics, but they have to be properly motivated and led. There is something very wrong with any organization that doesn't have its share of women. What is called for today is a strong movement, normal and natural, to do the job, and not anything weird or introverted. Once the correct balance is struck for attracting women, the rest won't be far behind. Volume 12, Number 3, March 1983. (9.22) Circumstantial Constraints and Karma. There are those who will rule the validity and existence of karma right out the window. As nearly as I understand it, it could boil down to reap as ye sow. There are references to good karma and bad karma, and, again, the way I take it, it is different from luck in that it is like a cloud or a rainbow that follows you around according to some word or deed of yours in the past. It's something that has to be dealt with or lived with. Rather than hard results to be overcome, in the negative sense anyway, it is something to be lived down. Real or unreal, it is something which affects the way people receive you or don't receive you, like an aura. Furthermore, it can be passed down through time, and therefore it is wise to take care what kind of karma one takes upon himself or bequeaths to his posterity. No small bit of inconvenience do we labor under to this day with the story of the 6 million. Though the number of dead has been established statistically at around 250,000, and though there were no gas chambers as such, still the whole picture of a bunch of little Jews being killed rather sticks in the throat of most people. No less with the Manson family does the matter of the 5 to die, in quotes, keep cropping up, despite the fact that Manson himself had no part in these killings. Again, a house full of minor slime drippers, and, to make matters 100 times worse, a pregnant female to boot. When people think of Hitler and Manson, these are the visions that pop into mind primarily, such as the karma those of us who follow in their path have to deal with. Personally, as a young kid just coming into the movement, and knowing nothing other than what I had been told by the liberal education system, I never at any time had a problem with the 6 million. I admit it is strange and unusual, but it never bothered me. Hitler looked good to me, and I was ready to go, regardless. I was sure in my own mind that he must have had his reasons for killing all those Jews. And well do I recall the moment in the summer of 1969 when the news broke on television of the discovery of the Tate killings, months before the case was cracked and the world would hear the name of Charles Manson. Well, too, do I recall thinking to myself at that time one word, good. A favorite line when asked if we would condone the killing of women and children in the event of an all-out race war is one whereby I correct the language by adding, you mean females and offspring? Good karma is the kind gotten by Joseph Franklin by killing mixed couples. If anybody chafes at that, we can't use them under any circumstances. Personally, I can see the use of wholesale measures plus being utterly thorough in one's task, but, as I fully understand, Most people still retain certain hang-ups along these lines. The word is compunctions. Some are born with them, and others are born without them. I was one of the fortunate few. But though we have thought of ourselves for many years now as purely revolutionary and esoteric with regard to what public relations we still do maintain, we still have to struggle to keep matters neatly within the context most readily understood and accepted by the majority. Reasonability. No less a man than Robert Lloyd told us a long time ago that we need to adopt a missionary approach. Missionary in quotes. It hasn't been easy and it's not much fun, but it does have some good effects. Getting back to the two historic and philosophic giants who I have spoken of in this segment, as Commander Rockwell never tired of insisting upon, rightly, Adolf Hitler did not saddle us with any handicaps whatsoever. The problem only comes in when tiny minds attempt to measure great men and great deeds by their own inadequate standards. It, of course, will never fit. But if we fully understand who we are and what we want, then none of us should expect or want it to fit. If it were all very pleasant, nice, and polite, then, like everything else that way, it would mean nothing. This is the single big reason I came to the movement in the first place as a kid who knew nothing of the usual right-wing background garbage through which most found their way in. I had looked around and I was sick and tired of all the sugary, sweet, prim and proper crap that existed around me in society, and all of which added up to a big zero. Where there is real adversity, there is real substance and real worth. I wasn't disappointed. One thing to keep in mind as we go about the struggle today in our own way in our own time is that hindsight is always 20/20. What really matters, though, is what takes place either right now or in the immediate future, and the plain inescapable fact is that any action at all is better than none. Beggars can't be choosers, and I assure you, we are at the moment begging for action of any kind just to break the boredom and the deadlock. Anything would be welcome. I wrote previously in Siege that a little forethought is essential if we are to transform our situation from one of hand to mouth to one wherein we are able to actually call a few of the shots. Malice aforethought? Does it matter much should you be unlucky enough to end up before a system court? In all truth, one is far less likely to be caught and more likely to have a much greater impact and better karma if he contemplates matters ahead of time in a cool and rational way. Pick and choose time and place. It is called getting professionalized and winning. Volume 12, Number 6, June 1983. 9.23, Toward Higher Thresholds. Tomasi printed in a very early issue of the original Siege, "He who is not busy being born is busy dying." This says, in essence, that there is no such thing as successfully standing still. You are either growing, changing, and expanding, or you are withering and dying. To better explain what is meant by my using the term threshold here, most have heard of the reference threshold of pain. Some people are very stoic and won't flinch or complain at the worst discomfort. Others will scream and faint dead away at the mere sight of blood. The first group is said to have a high threshold of pain, while the latter group has a low one. By training and by discipline, all backed up by willpower, one can raise their own thresholds and thus increase their endurance. How familiar is the sight of timid, faint hearts who fear everything which is found outside of master's rules? Fear, anticipation, anxiety, panic, shock syndrome, and gutlessness. How many of us today may have been scared by that very first police knock on our front doors, or frightened by that first violent street confrontation with the enemy? Commander Rockwell wrote that he did not expect to return from that first White House picket in 1958. Here we have the threshold of fear or of trouble. But he did return from that one and 1,000 others far worse. A combat veteran of 2 wars, he had to come to grips with an entire new and different situation, confrontation at home. He got good at it, from fighting in the streets to fighting and winning in his own court battles. As far as physical combat is concerned, he knew and wrote that, in battle, one's adrenaline takes over, provides extra strength and reflexes, and also blocks out pain. The pain, as he said, only comes later, if injury is sustained, during the mending. As far as the trouble threshold is concerned, Commander Rockwell wrote later that, again, the night after John Kennedy was assassinated, it appeared to one and all in the American Nazi Party, even with 5 years' experience behind them, that, with all the hue and cry raised by the Jewish media that, quote, hate killed Kennedy, they would not last the night. Of course, they did last the night, and went on to bigger and greater things. So how high can these thresholds go? How much pain is too much? What does it take to shake you? The answer, of course, is that you set your own limits. Commander Rockwell lived with imminent death for 9 years, through countless death-dealing encounters with the enemy, before he was suddenly shot in ambush by an ex-associate. He always claimed that his audacity kept him alive. He pulled many publicity stunts in those 9 years, any one of which could have gotten him killed. But he knew, even in his quieter moments, that he was a marked man every second of every day of his life, no matter what, once he openly stood forth and accused the Jews. How many hotshot punks carelessly risk their lives on motorcycles every night of the week and end up dying in bed at a ripe old age? What does it represent? Nothing. Because it is all for nothing. True bravery is a constant. It is a singleness of purpose, a complete devotion to a cause higher than oneself. Knowing what to expect, or at least being ready for anything, and being totally committed to an idea, is what is required. Being caught anywhere in the middle is a potentially disastrous situation, one that inevitably leads to personal tragedy, which we in the movement have seen played out many times. The Orientals are noted for a frame of mind similar to what I'm talking about, but theirs is passive in nature. Ours, owing to our blood, is anything else but passive. Sustained in the belief, await the opportune moment and then take the appropriate action. Never be sidetracked, never be tripped up by being distracted by the issues of the moment. Always take the long view. A truly superior state of mind will keep you perpetually ahead of the situation. Just as with Adolf Hitler, be unshakable in your determination and your belief. All this can only come with a full grasp of reality, regardless of how you come about that full grasp. As Commander Rockwell outlined in Hoc Signo Vinces, in this sign we win, or in this sign we conquer, it takes a certain intelligence, a certain amount of guts, and definitely sufficient physical follow-up in order to survive and be able to push forward to victory. Volume 12, Number 7, July 1983. Nine twenty-four. There's no fanatic like a religious fanatic. All who have read thus far in Siege will know that I myself am purely political in outlook and am an atheist. However, I try at all times to be above all else a realist, and lately I've been taking a harder look at what, statistically, tends to make the better, more durable kind of social and political movement. It appears that these movements which have the most to offer to all the human needs tend to do better than their more narrow, confined counterparts, i.e. the cults. There, of course, can be narrow religious cults, narrow political cults, but the point is that self-limitation should be scrupulously avoided. Instead of choosing to burden and restrict ourselves, we should rather afford ourselves every possible advantage and opportunity. A well-balanced movement containing all the elements of human existence would seem to be the only thing capable of filling the vacuum that is yawning before us as alienation continues to grow from the plastic crap, cheap, quote, imitation of life, unquote, that the system offers. Every angle, from the most personal to the political and the religious, if that is what people still claim to want. Manson would agree here, himself being more of a holy man than anything else. Volume 12, Number 8, August 1983. 925, Revolution equals Family. To be able to understand the meaning of revolution in these times demands a rethinking of the concept of family. The kind of family we're talking about here bears no resemblance to the so-called family as it is known to and among the pigs of the system, the entity they constantly cry about being torn apart when, in fact, it had long since become nothing more than an evil farce. This has nothing whatever to do with the bonds of matrimony or even of immediate blood relation. It has even less to do with the threadbare notions of family man or the good citizen, which that first term would seem to entail. The new and true concept of family is so revolutionary in these times as to become interchangeable with revolution itself. If the machinations of the Jew and liberal have caused a terminal cancer in this society, then it is up to those who wish to survive to produce a new nucleus, colon, the family. It means people, and need I throw in white people, living and working closely together in harmony and in communion. Not calling it off at a certain hour or on a certain day and returning back home to the job, this concept of family is total. It, of course, begins with a man-woman relationship and grows outward, immediately following with children. In this screwed-up society, this will as often as not involve men and women of an age that has attained some maturity, having gone through one or more bum relationships or marriages. It is a fortunate few in this jungle who will find the right mate first off the bat. We are searching and sifting, trying to build something out of the wreckage. We cannot expect to start off with perfection. We must instead have as our goal the constant struggle for perfection. The only true revolutionary is the realist, and the only true realist is he who plays the ball as it lies. Men and women of good race who are compatible are all that is necessary. The will to live and to survive is the bond. No idiotic notions of fun, romance, tradition, security, or anything else can ever enter in. The realization that we cannot survive this alone, any of us, must govern all our thoughts and actions. The best security is the awareness and the preparedness for the tooth and nail struggle that is upon us, plus the grim determination to survive at all costs. There'll be plenty of fun and romance connected with the fight itself. Each day brings another victory. Each hit, large or small, carried off against the system, represents another vindication. This calls for men and women with their eyes open, cold and sober, yet full of life. These types are getting scarcer each generation. It can mean living underground, but it will more commonly mean living in a state of gradually moving further toward the underground. Holding off Big Brother where possible, ripping off Big Brother where possible, dropping out of the slave market first, working toward dropping out of the system entirely, discarding the dead and false values of morality of the rest of the slaves, and doing only what you have to do in order to survive. It means raising a generation of children who are conscious of their race and conscious of the evil that dominates the mainstream of life. It means giving these children true values and real purpose, the things they will need when the full-scale war takes place about the time they are reaching adulthood. The best long-range goal this strategy can have is our successfully existing, not as atoms, but as effective units, then tribes, communities, and finally again as a nation. This biological bond must live and build, it must survive, while all forms of system and government are diminished and blasted away. That was volume 13, number 3, March 1984. 9.26, starting at the beginning. A real family unit to withstand the shocks and stresses of life in the heart and belly of the beast system will require large measures of intelligence, cooperation, resourcefulness, guts, discipline, plan, and purpose. Note well that these are also the very things that would be needed to build a successful political movement or party to accomplish the same goals. For whatever reasons, these have never been found in sufficient supply in the movement thus far, and I believe that as long as there is even a hint of the old forms and concepts left over, they never will be. The only way to really stop the role-playing and get on with business is to trash-can all the old framework, over which we attempted to drape grand illusions. When we start off at ground level, with nothing but ourselves, we'll quickly latch on to what's real and learn to automatically reject what isn't. The unreal and unhealthy stag atmosphere of the former movement will be right away dispelled when one sees that he cannot make it without a good helpmate and proceeds to find one. The ridiculous and utterly ineffectual hobbyist air that has always permeated the former movement will disappear when one stops slaving at a pig job in order to support his movement, quote, hobby, and instead devotes himself full-time to surviving free of any such pig entanglement. It will then become sink or swim. And those who do swim will soon become Olympians at it, and, at the same time, damned good and deadly revolutionaries. Once the hobbyism is stopped and the realities start to shine through, then the offspring will see it as the only way to have a future instead of a joke that the Jews have made it out to be thus far, and as the fools in the movement have been going out of their way to confirm. An ideology of survival at all costs amidst a poisonous and decaying environment can only evolve over a period of time after great test. We each who have stuck it out this far in the old movement have a great advantage over the rest. We have the background. The future may be as difficult for us as any of the rest, however. We will learn. This is the actual melding of the George Lincoln Rockwell idea and the Charles Manson idea. Racially and politically conscious family. All caps for all those words, racially and politically conscious family. Militant, white family or families bonded together by an evolving, revolutionary ideology. Not only is this our only chance for survival, it is our guarantee of victory because nothing can withstand it. Now is the time to begin. Volume 13, Number 3, March 1984. Finally, the last segment, or the last selection for this segment, 9:27, we missed our exit. I was on a short hop to the state capitol last month, armed with a set of totally erroneous directions on how to reach a certain destination. They were correct, providing one was approaching the area from the west rather than from the south, as I was. After I got that much figured out and was nearing the spot, the sheet of paper indicated that exit 96 was the one I needed to take. Watching the signs along the interstate, I first saw exit 95 and then, to my dismay, exit 97. If I had applied traditional movement logic to that situation, I'd have stayed on that interstate and would have long since gone off the west coast into the Pacific Ocean. Or I could have gotten mad and quit. Instead, I turned around and quickly found exit 96 and arrived in time with 20 minutes to spare. In one of his editorials in a 1966 issue of the Stormtrooper magazine, Commander Rockwell headlined, "Der Tag approaches." The day approaches. Judging by national and world events of that time, as well as by his own actions and successes, that was not a bad assessment of the situation. But, within a year, he was dead and the race riots, etc., had abated. In short, the situation altered radically and practically instantaneously. Did the movement take heed of this? Hardly. The philosophy of that day, as well as I recall, was to just hold tight, and when things got bad enough, the people would come to us. In other words, all we had to do was wait until Der Tag dawned over the planet. But what our dead leader, Commander Rockwell, had neglected to tell us was that Der Tag meant the optimum chance for us to do it under his strategy and according to his guidelines as they were originally formulated in 1960. And so that particular Der Tag came and went, minus the right leader and appropriate action. We missed that exit. By 1969, a new leader had announced himself, literally to the world, in letters a mile high, and even that went unnoticed by a notoriously single-minded movement. Like the lonely scientist here on Earth who patiently and unceasingly send out signals into outer space and are prepared to receive signals from new forms of intelligence, that new to us, that is, had anyone within the movement been doing their job properly at that time, we'd have been able to afford ourselves a crucial advantage in 1969 or 70, which would have been oriented toward the 80s and 90s rather than 1960. But Charles Manson was too, quote, different, too, quote, off the beaten path to even bear noticing. And that's volume 12, number 4, April 1983. And that will end this section of chapter 9, the middle section. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll be back with you again real soon, and we'll pick up and conclude chapter 9 of James Mason's Siege.